Okay, everybody, there's only a limited number of shopping days until Christmas, which must mean it's August. Huzzah! As we bask in the mediocrity of life in England. let's alleviate the pain with the Linux Voice podcast, Series 5, Episode 13. My name is Andrew Gregory.
I'm Ben Everard.
My name is Graham Morrison.
And I'm basking in the mediocrity of Oberbayern.
Yes. Not just normal Bayern, Oberbayern.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah.
And that's Mike Saunders there. Mike has got the... Let's mix it up. Mike may have a neuron for us. We've got some finds and we've got some news. And then we've also got a voice of the masses. And somewhere around three quarters of the way through this podcast, there'll be a halfway reminder. If you like the sound of this... but brought to you in an edited paper-based format and maybe Electron-based, you can subscribe to Linux Magazine at linux-magazine.com. Therein, you will find many words, some of which written by us. Yeah, there's some stuff about macOS in this issue, isn't there, Mike?
I can't recall, actually. I'm busy writing for the next issue now, but there's usually references to macOS or... Morrissey or Frontier in every issue.
I tell you what, to make sure you don't miss out on the Morrissey Frontier macOS goodness, you'd better subscribe.
You guys are good.
Right, without...
we've had practice over the years.
We've done this before. So, without any further flim-flam or whiff-waff or inverted piles of piffle, let's get safely on with the news.
The news, right. This fortnight, or however long it's been, there's been quite a bit happening in the Linux world, actually, which is a bit unusual for the summer. Usually this time of year, I'm sort of shaking the barrel out to and reporting whatever nonsense has happened on mailing lists.
And not like normal.
Yeah, but this time, I'll stop talking nonsense and actually get on to the real news that I'm talking about. So first up is the Critter Foundation is in a spot of financial bother. This is the sort of umbrella organization that produces the software of the same name, the drawing software. And essentially, it's a multinational organization with sort of paying people in different countries. And tax rules are weird. And they've kind of got caught in a vortex of weirdness, and depending on whether or not they're a company or a not-for-profit or a not-for-profit that sells things, so it can't really be a not-for-profit, but also kind of doesn't make a profit. And essentially, the long and the short of it is the Dutch tax authority are tapping them up for a load of money, which they don't have. And unless they can raise some more money in a relatively short space of time, they're, I don't know what's going to happen. They're going to run out of money and all the badness that entails.
Damn, didn't they get quite a bit of this money from crowdfunding fundraisers?
And I don't know exactly the breakdown of their money, but yeah, they do a fundraiser. I think it's every year or every release.
I'm sure we've talked about them before.
Yeah, they were due to do a fundraiser earlier on in the year. And in fact, I think this... employing accountants to look into this, and probably the stress of dealing with the situation has delayed development and delayed their crowdfunding, because I think it's completely unexpected. And I think it's to do with the fact that there wasn't enough separation between their training videos and their books, which I think they make some money on, and the genuinely charitable foundation stuff, at least in the country that they're of origin for their registration. And as well, the lead developer, is it Dmitry, does some work in Russia, which needs to have VAT paid on it, even though there's no VAT in Russia. And this is the explanation that went on the Critter website. So it sounds like a whole complicated, and we know how complicated VAT can be and how difficult and how costly it is to navigate your way around these treacherous European bureaucratic waters.
Yeah,
baseless, unelected.
keeping our bananas bent or straight or whatever it is. But yeah, I also know, not really firsthand, but working for a foundation with a small group of people, that There's so many rules and regulations and things that we have to be aware of, how money comes in. Most of it's donations, of course, to the Document Foundation, but our boss, Florian, has to deal with so many different laws and things. It seems quite a lot of work.
Yeah, and I can imagine as well, I've met them, the Critter guys, they're doing an amazing job, and I think we'd all agree that Critter is a phenomenal application considering it's open source and run by such a small group of people who deal with their own stress and difficulties. And to have to like kind of live in that place where you're trying to do good and you're thinking you're doing the right thing, and then to have the taxman come down on you and say, you're living in cloud cuckoo land, you owe us this amount of, life-changing money, really, if it had to come out of their own pockets. Yeah.
Yeah, because I think they weren't trying to cheat the tax. No. They weren't, they'd been to accountants, they'd set stuff up, they thought they were doing it properly, yeah. And then suddenly the taxman turns around and goes, no.
And it's not even like it's profitable. It's not like I'm imagining they have made money out of it. I mean, and one of them is unemployed and basically doing this from their own savings.
Yeah.
That really is the frightening thing I find about the whole tax thing. If you could just press a button and then get a number up on screen that says you owe us this amount of money.
Yeah.
But because there's always an element of interpretation, and you have to just take it on as a matter of faith that you've got it right. And if you've not got it right, just...
Yeah, yeah.
What you're saying is we should have set up Linux Voice Limited as a Panamanian shell company.
Well, that's
what the cool kids do.
It's a bit like, you see, terrorists will always encrypt their email, and it's the rest of us like dealing with the tax that deal with the flotsam and jetsam of complexity that the bureaucrats come up with to help us through life.
Yeah, so, yeah, what remains on that story really is to wish Critter Foundation the best of luck, and if you are in a position to help, they are seeking donations.
No more donations. That's what got them into this fine mess.
Yeah, in fact, it's surprising, I think, it's indicative of their state of thinking, that they haven't created a specific fundraiser for this situation.
Well, I guess it... To them, it probably feels, when you're usually doing crowdfunding, you like crowdfund this feature or that feature, and it sort of, it would feel like a hard sell to say crowdfund as not being in financial trouble.
Yeah.
Happens all the time in America with their crazy healthcare system.
True. That's a positive note to end on.
Yeah.
5 minutes in, and I think we've about covered all of our usual bases.
Should we move on to our next item of news?
Go on.
And that's that Slackware has turned 24 as the oldest. As the oldest remaining Linux distro. It's crazy that it's 24 years old.
I haven't used Slackware in years. I went through a period, I think it was like the mid-2000s, maybe you could call it like a mid-Linux crisis, where I use Slackware. It's a really good distro. I mean, it's very plain and basic. Pat and his team don't patch a lot of things, so it's pretty upstream, pretty vanilla. I don't know if it's switched to systemd yet. I'm not sure if that's something that's keeping people on or driving people away. But yeah, I'm glad it's still going, even though it's something I haven't used for ages.
Yeah, I had a look at their sort of news site just to sort of get some information for this. And the top two posts, one was from 2016 and the next most recent post was from 2013.
But I think those are probably for major releases, and it's probably similar to like Debian, Debian probably is a much bigger project and community, so they have more things to shout about. But I think the Slackware guys are not, posting about any trivial stuff. It's just, we've made a new version, go and get it.
And it's good that it's still going and that people want to use it.
Yeah, I think I remember when you came into the office, Mike, because obviously you've been writing for Linux Format from the very first issue, but when you finally came down to Bath and worked with us in the office, you were using Slackware then.
That's why you all avoided me, sat in the corner. Here's that one guy that uses Slackware. So, yeah, it must have been that time, because shortly afterwards I switched to Well, they must have switched to Ubuntu or Zubuntu just for a Debian basis. I'm trying to remember my whole distro path now. I don't know how difficult it will be to use Slackware today, given how much, you know, how much distros do a lot of fancy with a graphical install. There's an auto detection of everything. But yeah, if you just want Linux without lots of extra add-ons and your packages being patched to bit, whatever I'm trying to say, just ignore me. To bits, then it's Slackware's. It's like the free BSD of Linux, some people call it.
It's probably the most major distro that I haven't used.
That would be a good voice of the masses, actually.
Yeah, I think it's the same for me as well, Ben. I don't think I've ever used Slackware.
I've never used it.
I've had a poke around it once or twice, but I've never used it as my daily OS.
I mean, you wouldn't actually know you were using it because there's nothing really specific about it. It doesn't have, you know, a configuration tool like Yast or, you know, a special installer or anything like that. It's just, you know, a special window manager. It's just pretty vanilla Linux. It has a package manager, but I think they're just normal tarballs.
Okay, so happy birthday, Slackware. And sticking with dates, we've the sysadmins amongst you may have noticed we've moved up in the Unix timestamp from 1.4 billion to 1.5 billion. Second since 1970, in case you're wondering what that's referenced to. And this is one of the weird things. I actually feel a change. So I use timestamps quite a lot. In the same way as like a change of year, like when you sort of start writing 2017 for the first time. And it's because I use timestamps sort of in various ways. I mean, we name our backups after timestamps is one sort of obvious thing, but use them in various other things as well. And it's, you just get so used to 1.4, 1.4, 1.4, and suddenly it's 1.5. it feels strange.
The world has changed. I can taste it in the water.
So this is the number of seconds since 1970, and many Unix systems store it as a 32-bit integer, yeah, which means it's going to overflow in 2038 and we're all going to die. Is that right?
Well, who still uses a 32-bit system?
No, but 32-bit time T, I thought that was the problem. I know like OpenBSD's moved to it, but I thought there were still loads of machines out there using a 32-bit number integer to store time.
Oh, maybe. I thought as long as you're using a 64-bit system, you had a 64-bit time, but I could be wrong.
I don't know either about that. I mean, it may be the case, but I remember the OpenBSD guys switched, as they always do. They just like, hey, we don't care about compatibility. We'll just change it. But, I mean, there's lots of scaremongering about this, like the, you know, Y2K. But, you know, that was just silly Windows boxes, whereas, you know, all your nuclear power stations running on SCO Unix with COBOL directing everything, and they're all going to explode in 2038.
Actually, I was thinking, I was saying he uses 32-bit OS, obviously almost everyone on ARM systems, which isn't that small.
I thought there was 64-bit ARM.
They exist, but they're rare. Most ARM systems are 32-bit still.
Even like the Pi 3?
Yeah, Pi 3 is 32-bit.
Okay, so all the Pis are going to explode in 2038 as well.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. Pretty sure that's how it works.
Cool. Is there anything else interesting coming up, like a change from 14 to 15 in timestamps?
Well, obviously, it's going to go from 15 to 16 in a couple of years.
Oh, dude.
So 1.4.
Keep us updated.
Yeah, I can tell that no one else has found this quite as exciting as I have. your boring human dates.
When you mentioned sysadmins at the beginning of this mini section, I thought you were going to say it was sysadmin day, like 2 days ago, I think, or 3 days ago.
Was it?
No.
Yeah. I saw something on Facebook or Twitter or Twitchbook.
I think that's the only place you ever see that.
Unlike timestamp news.
Yeah, timestamps affect me. Someone making up a day about stuff doesn't affect me. Okay, yeah, let's move on to our next item of news. And that is that I originally wrote this as there is a new UK company selling Linux laptops. And then I found out that there's another Linux company offering Linux laptops. The news is that there's two companies. And I've managed to mess my Windows up, so I need to do a scroll around, which is really annoying on this computer. Yes, they are Station X Rocks and Starlab Systems. And they're both offering a fairly small selection of desktops and laptops for purchase with various distros pre-installed.
What was the first one called again?
Hang on, I've just rearranged my windows.
Should be using a tiling window manager.
I'm using Chrome OS, which just doesn't seem to like Windows moving around at all. StationX.rocks is their domain.
Oh, I'm not sure about that name. I mean, good luck to them, but...
The other one being Starlab Systems.
Okay. Both are kind of sound cool, a bit spacey, but... For the laptops, are they like rebadged... I guess they're bought from an ODM somewhere and...
Yeah. So they're not making the laptops from scratch. They're essentially specking them out and getting them put together and then, doing the software side of things. At least I assume that's what they're doing.
I've just loaded up the StationX.rocks website. And it's a very odd background animation in the background if you watch it. I'm not sure it makes me want to buy a laptop from them.
I can't look away at the same time I don't want to look.
It's a nice loop. He's kept his head very still.
Well, no, I don't like that now. Just look into my very soul.
Right.
It looks a little bit like someone's done a stop motion animation with a corpse.
That's what they do as the skin dries out.
I can't remember the exact cost, but from the look of that, I think it's about one soul. they're both on the high end-ish of machines, and I haven't had one to test out, so I can't tell you how well they work, but they did look... it's nice to have the companies providing this as a thing.
Yeah, it is. It really is.
Because otherwise you just sort of spend years scrolling through reviews to try and work out which distros are going to work on the laptop.
Yeah, yeah. Oh. It is a really good thing to have.
So let's move swiftly on to our final piece of good news this fortnight. And that's that Solus now has a full-time developer. Ikey, who some of you may know from the Late Night Linux podcast, is now working full-time on... his distro.
Oh, excellent. Right, so he's back on it.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
I say working full-time, working mostly full-time and then doing a podcast as well.
So did he have to... because he packed it in recently, didn't he? Am I thinking of the right person, the right thing here?
I'm not sure.
Or he was having difficulties in keeping up with Solus. So has he got some sort of funding stream from somewhere?
Yeah, I think most of it comes through Patreon, and it's basically people using Solus.
Brilliant stuff.
Yeah, that is great news. I was just trying to find the...
Is that the only thing that was released in the last week, Ben?
Some other stuff was released, but...
Abbey Word or something, yeah.
Yeah, it's just a boring incremental release, I think. A couple of bug fixes in Abbey Word, that sort of thing.
Yeah. I think LibreOffice celebrated a couple of 100,000 more German comments translated to English.
there's a new Swahili spell checker.
Do you reckon there's some hardcore Germans trying to get translate comments back into German?
Yeah.
Well, just constantly hitting submit on the Git request.
I don't get it. Like, I know that there are more English-speaking developers than German-speaking developers, but I don't get why it's such a big deal. Like, no one's offended by a few lines of German, are they, surely?
No, the problem is, I think they're down to about 5,000 German comments now in the source code over, 7 million lines or something. The problem is they are in rather complicated parts of the source code. So not, you know, given the history that a lot of the code dates back, you know, some of the code dates back 2 decades, it's not really that big a deal and not a big priority for developers. But the idea is, if you want to attract new people to your open source project and they dive into some random point, if all they see is German comments and German variable names and stuff, which gets a bit more complicated, then it can be a bit off-putting for them. So that's why the goal is to eventually turn them all to English.
Plus all those buttons that control the fluffiness, how do you describe those in German comments?
Exactly, given that German clearly has no word for fluffy.
What are the main features, Mike, in this latest release? Has it got the new UI yet?
So 5.4 has updates to the notebook bar, which is, you know, sort of modernized interface design, tabbed context interface design. It's still experimental in this release because the design team's still working on it. But this will be the last release in the 5.x series of LibreOffice. Yeah, the next release, which is due in 6 months, we try and stick to a six-month schedule, will be 6.0. And that will... the 5.x series was focused on user interface refinements, and the 6.x series is going to be focused on LibreOffice everywhere because we've got LibreOffice online now, you know, so in the cloud and the Android versions, getting improved. We've got Google Summer of Code guys working on that. So, yeah, 5.4 was a pretty evolutionary release. I mean, there are new features. Pivot tables in Calc, for instance, is pretty cool for some people.
Hang on, they've been there for ages.
Oh, pivot charts in Calc. So charts for pivot tables that get automatically updated. A bunch of other stuff. Somebody actually made a video about it, which people will find on the internet.
Oh, yeah, Susie Denmark
made a great video about it. There's a bunch of new stuff. There's a lot of file format compatible improvements as well. So, you know, it's always a bit of a moving target chasing the Microsoft so-called standards, but each release gets a bit better there as well. Nothing enormous to shout about, but a step forward on the road to 6.0.
No, it's brilliant. And you're doing God's work, Mike.
And a major release might make it onto the news list.
I see. This is why we'll jump to 6.0 next time, Ben, so you'll actually talk about this, yeah. In fact, we might just go to 10.0 just to be really sure we get on the podcast.
And that's the news this fortnight.
Thank you, Ben. So it's now time for finds of the 3 weeks. I asked the IRC channel, there's just a few, so let's go through them. The first one is from Ian Gogo, gitolite.com/index is a small Git repo thing, or as the Arch Wiki defines it, Gitolite allows you to host Git repositories for multiple users easily and securely. Which does sound cool because you don't often, even if you want to host your own Git server, that's cool, but building the infrastructure to manage users around it usually takes a bit more involvement. So if there's an easy solution for that, that's cool. James Olympus says, Image Magic handles PDFs. Or is that too niche? No, that isn't. In fact, in the old Linux format days, the thumbnails for the digital versions of the... PDFs that we generated and made it available to subscribers, and may still well do, as much as I know. We used a script which called Image Magic to create the thumbnail images for the articles in that. Tracy C says, I had migrated to Nextcloud, but for people who are still running own cloud, they need to migrate to a new marketplace or their old apps will be broken. So I think that's like a public service announcement for people using own cloud, and if they update, their apps will be broken if they don't update to their to OwnCloud's new marketplace system. I haven't used OwnCloud for a while since NextCloud. Ian Gogol also says GNOME's Tetris clone allows you to cheat, but doesn't say any more about that. And also, Tracy C has, this is a really good find because this came up on the IRC channel last week. I'll make this the last one because it's a really good one to finish on. There's a link, I'll put it in the podcast notes. It's basically a script, if you're running Ubuntu, to see which PPAs you have installed and which PPAs you are actually still using, and tells you the ones that you aren't using so you can get rid of them and know that you're not going to lose any updates or packages or anything like that, which is brilliant because a lot of us just add PPAs all over the place whenever we need them and forget about them, and they all sit there adding to the update latency and all that. So that's a really good find. It's actually an answer on askubuntu.com. And so they are the finds from IRC. Does anyone else want to go? I never know whether to go at this point, but I've just spoken, so I feel like somebody else should say something. I don't know.
That's cool. It's good to mix up, give people a treat. Not just give all of your throat chocolates all in one go.
That's a horrible word.
So, I have discovered three things, or found three things, I can never remember. So the first and the most time-sensitive one is that today is Yorkshire Day, so I'm celebrating it by being in Yorkshire.
It's sunny. Is that sun behind you?
It is. It's the light.
Bloody hell, it's the we've got the clouds of Mordor. Wastes. Yes.
I've got snow blindness in August because it's just so, so dashed cold.
Have you been on
Whippets?
Have you been on Ilkley Moor Bar Tat?
Only a fool would do something as dangerous as that.
My second find is that, it's not really a find. I was on Mastermind, recording an episode of Mastermind in glorious Salford week before last, and my discovery is that John Humphreys has no chatter for the 600 and odd grand that we pay him. Not even a hello. At least Paxman had the decency to come out and flirt with the hot Oxbridge chicks. Humphreys didn't even do that.
You mean when you were on University Challenge?
Yes, that's right. For the context for the kids.
And I've got another story, another discovery, which is that perennial giver of gifts, Amber Rudd, has been at it again.
Well, we've all seen.
We've all seen. It's amazing, isn't it? Real people aren't interested in privacy because only terrorists want privacy. So put in a back door, but don't tell anybody. Just keep it secret so that we can use it because the government is good and other people are bad. But that's given an opportunity for the media to print something by Jim Killick, who we met ages ago, and he is the executive director of the Open Rights Group. Very, very interesting man and leader of an extremely worthwhile organisation. Ben and I interviewed him for Linux Voice back in the day. And Jim says, "The suggestion that real people do not care about the security of their communications is dangerous and misleading. Some people want privacy from corporations, abusive partners or employers. Others may be worried about confidential information or be working in countries with a record of human rights abuses. It is not the Home Secretary's place to tell the public that they do not need end-to-end encryption. Amber Rudd must be absolutely clear on what cooperation she expects from internet companies. She is causing immense confusion because at the moment she sounds like she's asking for the impossible." Yes.
Can I just, at this point, can I just bring up, did you see Malcolm Turnbull's Twitter storm? The Prime Minister of Australia.
Oh, yeah.
I've got it now. "The laws of mathematics are very commendable, but the only law that applies in Australia is the law of Australia." So, naughty laws of mathematics, go and take your encryption home.
In Australia, you know, when you
when you have a fraction, and then if you want to multiply that fraction, you turn it upside down. What happens in Australia?
You have to run it past the lawmakers first and see if you're allowed to do that.
Anyway, those are my discoveries. Congratulations, Amber Rudd. Good work.
Thanks, Andrew. Anyone else want to have a go?
Shall I go next?
Go for it, Ben.
I've got a couple of finds. I only had one until we started recording, and then I got a second. And the second one first is that I've managed to mess up I'm recording on my old Linux machine. I've managed to mess up the sound settings so badly. The only way to record from the correct microphone is to start recording and then open a Pulse Audio Control Center and attach the right microphone to it. And I don't quite know how I've managed to do that.
It's a new feature in Pulse Audio, yeah.
Yeah, but...
That's a strange one.
I don't remember what I did to end up in this situation, but it's confusing.
What distro are you using?
That's Lubuntu.
Ah, but it's, okay.
But it's quite an old Lubuntu, and to be honest, I've messed about with it so much, it's unfair to tie Lubuntu with my hackiness. And my second find is disappointingly incomplete. Me and my wife are expecting our first child, and one of the things is a mobile, you know, various things for baby, mobile for it to start and that sort of thing. And I decided that I wanted a custom-made mobile. I wanted it to have my things that are relevant to me, not just generic baby things to stare at, so that the blurry shapes swirling in front of its eyes are what blurry shapes that I've decided. So anyway, yeah, I found a guy who laser cuts plywood, and I created my design in Inkscape. With it's got the baby's initials handwritten by my wife and sort of traced around, and it should all be, various other things. And it's ready to collect, but I haven't been able to go and get it yet, so I can't actually say how well it's worked. But I'm quite excited to see how this all comes out and fits together.
That's not super geeky, though. There must be, what else have you done that's really geeky on this mobile, not just letters?
I should have put a penguin on there.
Yes, exactly.
I can't believe I didn't put a penguin on there.
And a gnu.
I don't know, the horns might be a bit spiky. I'm going to have to get a penguin cut out now as well.
But is this mobile going to be like Raspberry Pi controlled or something?
No, it's just a mobile.
What happened? Everything was Raspberry Pi in your house.
Literally nothing is Raspberry Pi in my house at the moment. Having said that, I have just ordered, it's a new, I don't actually know how new it is. I've only looked at the lineup, the official Arduino lineup recently, but I think they call it the Maker 1000, which has got a Wi-Fi jobby built in, a load of other stuff. That's going to be the thing I've been talking about for ages, monitoring the watering system in the garden. So the cool thing about that is it's got an inbuilt LiPo charging system. So it makes one of the sort of challenges with IoT stuff is obviously getting power in. And this one's have a solar power and a battery, but it's a little bit awkward to connect a solar power, a battery, and the thing they want to connect so that it charges and gets the power from the right place, etc. And that's all on board. This little Arduino jobby. So hopefully that will make it quite easy to build. I haven't quite decided on the back end for it yet, where to push all the data on the moisture content of the soil too.
GACQ's got it anyway, so.
Yeah. But that's not even a find yet, as I've yet to receive my my hardware.
It's a pre-find.
Yes. Wow.
This podcast just...
Anyway, those are my finds.
I guess that leaves me, does it?
Yeah, neither of us have had a go. You go, Mike.
I'll have a go. Just for entertainment, just so you've got time to get even more great finds, Graham. I got a find emailed to me, so I don't have to do the work, from Daniel Llewellyn, who says, Some dozy git went and got macOS running in a web browser. What kind of craziness is this? Hint, it was me. So thanks, Daniel. We'll put the link. I've sent the link to Graham. You can put them in the podcast notes. There have been these PC emulators in running in JavaScript in web browsers for a while now. So it's pretty nifty. Obviously, macOS is a nice low resource operating system. It still uses 50% of my CPU running in Chrome. It's a bit different to, you know, its original design for running on like a 386. But yeah, it's pretty cool for just playing around with and seeing what's possible using JavaScript. And then I had a quick look around on YouTube, even though I haven't updated macOS in, I think, like 2 years now, 2.5 years, and there's nothing really going on with it. I've kind of done what I wanted to do. People are still making, every few months, somebody makes a new YouTube video about it. macOS includes a very simple music program, if you can even call it that. It's extremely rudimentary and bare bones, but you can press keys and it makes noises from the PC buzzer. And somebody's made a video of them composing music in the macOS keyboard. Again, I've sent the link to Graham. That's in the podcast notes. You know, it's monotonic music. Not monotonic. It's only one
monophonic.
Monophonic. Thank you. Yeah. So you know, there's no awesome counterpoint going on. You can't even do, you know, double stopping. So it's very, very simple. But
there's nothing to stop you harmonizing with it with your voice.
Well, that's true. You could sing along with it, and if somebody. Okay, if somebody records themselves listening to this music and singing along to it, then they win a Linux Voice Award, which has, you know, the prize remains to be seen what it is. But
is it a boxed edition of macOS?
It's a PNG of a boxed edition of macOS. Yeah, because I can't be bothered posting anything. But yeah, so listening to the music, maybe somebody can, you know, run it through another program and make it sound even more incredible, and then send us a link if you do something cool with it.
Cool. So that leaves my finds. Last night I went to see Dunkirk at IMAX. It was mostly off the recommendation of Corruptor on the Linux Voice IRC channel. He's the developer behind Lumo, which is a really brilliant game. I recommend everyone go out and play. I finished Lumo just recently. It took me ages to find the time to finish it off. It's a great game if you're nostalgic for 80s isometric games. But Dunkirk itself, I thought, was a good film. And I know we sometimes talk about films. And I like Christopher Nolan, although, unlike a lot of people, I didn't like Interstellar terribly. But the filming, it's an unusual war film. And I guess, depending on your views of what Britain represents and what kind of transition it's going through, it may or may not say some things about it, unintentionally, I'm sure, but it says something about British psyche. I don't know. But it's beautifully shot. It's a great film.
I've heard good things about it. I haven't seen it myself either, but what makes it unusual, would you say?
It's. I don't want to give any spoilers away, but the film itself doesn't have the usual characterization and backstory that you normally have. And it doesn't, I'm not saying it's realistic. I'm sure it's not. But the way that it's shot is, I've never seen a film like it. It's unique in the way that it starts in the middle of a battle and the battle continues. And there is no comfort. And I think it's exactly like Christopher Nolan wanted, in that it's just so immersive. It's very immersive. It pulls you just, considering, I don't know how he's done it, because there's no narrative, you're not following a character's arc like you would normally. There's no real comment. It's just this 1 hour, 10 minutes of filmmaking, really, that pulls you from the very beginning to the end and just kind of throws you out the other side of it. It's like it is really compelling viewing. I liked it. Another find is, a couple of months ago I mentioned Oscilloscope Music by Jerobeam Fenderson. He's created a series of videos that shows you how to make your own oscilloscope music, which is really cool. I mean, it's very audio and geeky. It's all stuff about DC coupling and sampling rates. Basically, how you turn sound of a specific frequency into music that's also that's listenable, but also something that creates these amazing 3D models if you plug it into an oscilloscope. Another find I've got is RPCS3 is a PlayStation 3 emulator that's just been released for Linux. I've not tried it. I've got a PlayStation 3 downstairs, used to have Linux installed on it until Sony removed the feature. It'll be really interesting to get up some of those old games if you can load games into it in that way. I don't know what stage it's at. Some of the screenshots and videos make it look like it's got to quite a good stage. I mean, I love emulators. I love the way that they keep these old things going. And it's great to see something as modern as the PS3 being modern. I mean, I say modern. I know the PS3 is now over 10 years old. It's amazing that it's such a...
Really?
Yeah.
Is the PS3 based on the x86 architecture?
No, it's not. It's the cell one. Do you remember? It's the weird cell architecture.
I'm looking now. I mean, obviously, that adds a lot of complication for... emulation then, you know, and slow down. I thought if it was x86, they may be able to do something in virtualization there. But yeah, I imagine you need a pretty powerful PC to emulate a PS3 well, even when it is 10 years old.
Yeah, I agree. I will try and get it running, and I'll try and get it running for FOSPIX and see how far it can get, and maybe report on it next time. I've got another couple of finds. I'll be quick. Quarter Tiling is another tiling manager script for KWin for KDE. I used the tiling window manager script for KDE. It's really useful. Quarter tiling is different in that it uses a different layout. It defaults to a window taking up a quarter of the display, which isn't ideal for me because I've got an ultra wide display, so I need to have columns rather than quarters, but it's still a great option. It's really good to see that hybrid window managers with tiling functionality seem to be becoming popular. And my final find is kind of linked to what Ben was talking about with home automation stuff. I got a kettle hooked up to Wi-Fi plug, and connected that to some really great open source software I think I've mentioned before called Domestitch, which is like this open source server that connects to all kinds of switches and services. So you can connect things like your own one-wire stuff running on a Raspberry Pi with other proprietary stuff. You can link it to things like Logitech's Harmony remotes. But you can't link it to things like Alexa, Amazon Echo, and Google's OK service unless you use this find, which is called HA. I keep thinking of HA Proxy, but it's not. It's HA Bridge. I've just forgotten it now. I've been talking so much. HA Bridge. It emulates Philips Hue boxes. Philips Hue is a lighting system that is proprietary to Philips, but has been reverse engineered and been used for years for cheap Chinese light bulbs, but also to be able to get lots of other IoT devices talking to other open source devices, because the bridge, the protocol has been reverse engineered and re-implemented as open source software. So you can basically make your kettle appear to be a light to Philips, to software that speaks Philips Hue protocol, so that you can then connect it to Alexa if you want. So I can say, Alexa, turn on the kettle, and Alexa does turn on the kettle, even though I've gone through about four different APIs to do that. But
that's brilliantly geeky. These Wi-Fi plugs intrigue me then. So they're basically, they just sit there, switch in the electricity, and you can turn them on. So your device doesn't have to be IoT enabled. Or
yeah,
whatever,
that's right.
But
yeah.
Ooh, I quite like the idea of lying in bed in the morning, waking up, doing something on my phone to turn on the kettle, which is like 4 meters away in the
kitchen.
It's
really, well, the Domestitch thing has an app you can use, and you can create widgets to do all these switches. But if you want to add, the great thing about HA Bridge is that it gets away from all of the Philips proprietary stuff. You can add any device you want and control it any way you want through a proprietary bridge. So with lots of other proprietary pieces of software pretending it's like Philips Hue, it's really good. It works brilliantly. In fact, it works really well with Domestitch. If you've got the devices already configured, it will scan them and add them, and then you just say what you want to call them. But yeah, you can think of many, many different things to do that with.
Oh, yeah.
And they were our finds.
Bumper finds. Smashing work, everybody. Still to come, we have the Neuron... or neurons, or lack of neurons.
I've not had any.
No? Okay. And we also have our voice of the masses.
So, as Mike's secretary, I've not taken any on his behalf, which I assume, unless people have been using secret pigeon message carriers to Mike, that means there are no neurons.
No, this time there were no neurons. I mean, maybe the thing that Daniel Llewellyn sent me, the MicroS in a browser, could have been interpreted as a neuron, but I didn't do that. So, yes. And it turns out I can access my old email, my Linux voice email, though I probably won't use it much. But you can send me a neuron, something for me to read out, something on your mind, get something off your chest, or a tip you've discovered, or anything, within reason, to mike@linuxvoice.com.
Right, that brings us barreling along at breakneck speed to the voice of the masses. We asked, what was your biggest Linux mistake? Mike, you came up with this question, didn't you? And what a great question it is.
Because right, thank you, Andrew.
Making mistakes is all what Linux is all about. So, there we go.
We're Andrew's right. Made a mistake.
Okay, I just made a mistake in the physical realm. So we all know what mistakes are, we all know what Linux is. Let's get straight into the comments. Torstein Krauser Janssen says, just no preamble, he's straight in there. One, Lilo made both my Windows and Linux install unbootable. Two, rsync removed all files on target server. Three, SSHD locked myself out. Four, RPM, installed RPMs from wrong distro, made my Red Hat 6.2 unusable. Yes. Javier, one, delete the /home partition during one upgrade. Yep, I've done that. Two, remove the kernel of the machine I was using. What? I didn't notice until I rebooted the computer. Luckily, I could contact the Linux Former IRC channel and somebody gave me the instructions to chroot my system and reinstall the kernel. I think that was before Linux Voice, he says. Probably was before Linux Voice because the quality of expertise may or may not have suffered when we all left. Mark Johnson says, convinced I knew what I was doing, I tried to install Gen 2 on an external hard drive plugged into my parents' Windows PC. I formatted the wrong drive.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. from mistakes comes learning, and you three are all learned chaps, so you must have made many, many cock-ups and errors.
Oh, God, I think almost everything that's been mentioned I've done at one point or another. It's always to do with data. I think that's the real jaw-dropping moment. DD is the command of hell for me. There are many occasions where I've DD'd the wrong device, and you realise about halfway through and things stop working and the file system stops working. You're like desperately trying to do Control-C on whatever it is you're trying to DD. And you save half of the file system and the other half of it is completely gone.
Yeah, I've DD'd to the wrong drive. I've only done it once, but I lost a partition to that. The one that sticks in my mind, though, I'm trying to remember exactly what I did, but I got managed to get into an absolute tangle. I was working at the terminal, and I moved the current directory into a different directory and then tried to delete something from the parent directory, but because I was in a different directory than I thought I was in, I deleted... I think I might have accidentally once deleted the whole of the /var/www directory of the Linux Voice servers, to be honest. But it was backed up, so it was all right.
I get the one thing that I remember, I can't remember ever like RMRFing anything, but I do seem to recall, because I've been using Linux since like 1998, then it all gets hazy, but I remember extracting a tar bomb. A tar bomb is a tarball that extracts all the files in the current directory rather than in a subdirectory, which means it can overwrite files in the current directory or just make your life rather unpleasant. I remember being in one directory, I had lots of different files with different names and extensions. I extracted this tar bomb, which came up with another 100 files with different names and extensions. So there was no easy command to remove them. Although I guess I could have like taken a list of the files in the tar ball and done like exargs and removed them. But it was a bad day anyway. That's all I remember.
It's usually file system stuff. I think that when you've put work into something and you've not saved it, the computer crashes, you know, you make a load of changes. And when, back when saving was costly and took time and to sync, you know, and you try and carry on, then something happens. And there are countless times I've overwritten the wrong file or been lazy and not made a proper backup. Or
well, that comment from the guy or girl who removed their kernel and then still the operating system kept running because I guess the kernel was loaded in RAM. It makes me want to experiment with some, you know, really destructive commands. I know rmrf root, you have to add an extra flag, don't you, to really make it happen.
No preserve root is the flag.
Yeah, I don't know when that was introduced. I'd be quite interested to play around with that. I think I've got a VM of Zubuntu running, so I'll try trashing it just for the lulls.
It's also mundane things like, because I use Arch, and if I'm going away on like an important trip, for some stupid reason, I'll like update Arch in the early hours of the morning before I go away on the trip. And then I won't test it or anything. And, you know, and my Wi-Fi driver is like manually hand-built against the kernel, which has now been updated. So as soon as I open it, you know, probably having to do some talk or something important, I don't have any Wi-Fi. And in fact, the fix is also really difficult. And it's just horrible things like that.
And what have you learned from using Arch?
I don't know, because I don't think I'm a typical Arch user, because Arch mostly works and I don't touch it, and it's only when things stop breaking. I've got a terrible memory, so I solve the problems once and then I don't remember how I solve them, and I hate having to solve the same problem again. I know I've done all this before, and what are the dependencies? What are the changes I need to make to the configuration file? Like, well, today, for example, I updated rspamd, which is a brilliant spam daemon I use for my own mail server. And the last time I did it was probably only about 2 months ago, but there's some specific change for system v init scripts rather than systemd because I'm using CentOS 6. And I can't remember what specific change I made, and I'd overwritten the file by just steamrollering tar bombing over the last installation. And so I basically had to go and work it out again, what it is. And I'd done it before. I've probably done it twice or three times before. I never learn to either write down what it is that I did or to at least take it a stepped approach.
Yeah. So every time I have to open a CPIO file, you know, I do it once every 2 years, and then I have to go and look at the manual page, which I don't think is well written. Oh, that's the command. Yeah. I never actually remember it.
Right, back to the masses. Dick Bain says, F duppies, he said, quietly sobbing. Or F dupes? No, is this is anybody?
Yeah, yeah.
What is F dupes?
What does it mean?
It's a program for identifying and deleting duplicate files residing within specific directories.
Oh,
sounds dangerous.
That sounds, yeah. That
there's
sounds
a recursive weird, but... and there's a delete option. Pseudo F2Ps.
Right, Burgess Meredith says, my biggest Linux mistake was not trying it sooner. Yeah. That and accidentally formatting my son's Windows drive with gparted when I first set him up to dual boot, no backup. I was able to recover it completely with Ubuntu, but it scared us both pretty good. I learned a valuable lesson about backing up and not partitioning drives while sleep-deprived. Yeah. Yeah, but I think I've definitely partitioned over a home partition before, and I've also partitioned over the master boot record. So it was that the stuff was all there.
Yeah.
And I think, Graham, you had to help me because I didn't
know what I was doing. Testis is amazing for doing that. For like rescuing you if you've deleted your master boot record.
But if you don't know what you've done, then the stuff might as well have gone.
Yeah.
It's rendered useless and I don't know. Back in the day, says Benz, before commercial repartitioning software, before parted, I didn't understand that when using FDisk, you delete a partition and put one or more new partitions in its place. I remember caveats about FDisk may cause data loss. No, using FDisk will cause data loss. To be fair, there was something about destructive partitioning, but this noob mind didn't quite understand it. I didn't understand it a few times. I was more than happy to pay for partition magic when it came along. John the Nice Guy has three, but they're all a bit long. The first one is, when I was an on-site technician for an IT outsourcer, I attended site with a replacement hard disk. I inserted the drive, booted, ran DD to copy disk one over disk two. 2 minutes in, I realised I was copying the new disk over to the old one. Oh dear, one disk shipped to a data recovery firm. Oops.
Oh no, I feel bad for laughing. That's horrible.
It's just, I read something today about a no-blame culture, which is used by air traffic controls. Every time there's a mistake, the idea is that it's like psychological well-being. The idea is that you don't shout and scream and sack the person who's made the mistake. A mistake is an opportunity for learning, for evaluating your processes and making sure that things are all right. So you're encouraged to come forth with these mistakes. And I feel like this is what we're doing now. Mike says, when I just began using Linux, for days I couldn't get Wi-Fi on my laptop to work on Ubuntu Hardy Heron. Then I realised that I had been selecting the passphrase option when in fact I had been trying to enter a hex key.
That I remember those like times.
The sort of thing that anyone could do. I like the Hardy Heron background wallpaper.
Yeah.
It was a bit abstract. Yeah, everyone's used RMRF to make things go wrong. Everybody's lost data. Everybody's partitioned over things. Pant says, I recently forgot to use vi sudo when creating a file in etc. sudoers. And a syntax error left me without a working sudo command. Oh no, I eventually sorted it by using pkexec. Pkexec. Pkexec.
Yes, I had exactly the same thing. I had data corruption in my sudo file. And yeah, you can use pk. I don't quite understand what pk... It uses PackageKit to authenticate, and I don't understand why you have both that and sudo, and I don't know, something to do with... I've never really understood authentication, to be honest. It confuses me. But you can use it to get system level privileges of another user in the same way you can with sudo. But it doesn't use the sudo as file.
Okay, so what we've learned from this is that you are not alone. If you start with the man in the mirror, we can all come together and heal Shimon. The world. Shimon. Shimon indeed, as a wise man once said. Now it's time to... There are only two more hours of Yorkshire Day left, so I've got to go to bed. Marvellous. Well, thanks for joining us, everybody. It's been lovely to see you, Ben, Graham and Mike.
It's been lovely to see you too, Andrew. I like your t-shirt.
Thank you. It's a special t-shirt. I'm not going to... We won't post an image, but it's...
No. leave the listeners in suspense.
It's a prominent... It's the t-shirt of a prominent band, featuring Clint Boone. Awesome!
I have no idea who that is.
Well, he was in Inspiral Carpets. Yeah. There we go.
Cool.
On that bombshell.
It's time to go. Right, everybody. Yeah. Goodbye.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.